Session number 10602, Reel 5.
Session number 10602, Reel 5.
Mr. Elliot, Reel 5. You were describing your motives, really, for joining the army. And I noticed when you were speaking earlier on that you gave a list of preferences. You said you wanted to join the RAMC and the RE in the Royal Artillery. Why in particular did you want to go for those?
To learn a trade. There was no hopes of ever getting a trade while you were working in the mines. And I somehow never felt that I wanted to be a miner for the rest of my life.
Why was that?
Hard to explain. I think the real answer would be I didn't want to work in the dark all the time with a lamp. You know, it's... there didn't appear to be any future except just mining, and somehow I didn't feel I wanted to be one. I wanted to get out of it if I could. But I was prepared to stay to help the family until the domestic scene happened with my father. I most probably would have remained in the mines, because there was nowhere else you could get work unless you left the mining industry to get into another industry. And as there was a great amount of unemployment in 1932 and around those years, you had a job and you were lucky to have a job. I think that would be the answer. But I thought if I could get into one of the parts of the forces where you could learn a trade, then after the service in the forces, I could take a civilian job where I could use the trade I'd learned. And I thought when I'd approached the Royal Air Force, I may have learned a trade there for the future, because the air travel seemed to be, to me, although I was quite ignorant of aircraft at the time, I wouldn't know one aircraft from another, it seemed that we had never had any aircraft, and then suddenly during the First World War they came out, and they seemed to have come out in increasing numbers. And I thought that might be like the motor car or the railways, where they'd expanded. I thought, well, you know, if they can travel from one place to another in an aeroplane, then surely they'll make them bigger. Progress, if you like. And that's what I thought, and that's why I wanted to learn something to get out of the mine so that I could maybe progress.
I see, thank you. Bearing in mind that what motivated you initially was this dispute with your father, what was the reaction of the rest of your family to your enlistment?
Well, I had told them what I was going to do, what I intended to do, rather, and then I proceeded to do it. Because at that time, I thought, and I think a great many of us thought, that you had to be 21 years of age before you could leave home. And it was through talking to someone, I'm not sure where or when, that I was told I could go into the armed forces at 18 and I couldn't be claimed out. And I thought that was the only escape from the domestic problem. So I went to Hartlepool, then I finished up at Durham, and then I was finished up in the Durham Light Infantry.
Did any of your friends express surprise that you were leaving? Did you feel any sort of regret that you would be leaving home and leaving the area where you knew your friends?
No, I've got to be honest there. I had made my mind up, and I thought, well, as they say in the army later, as I learnt the word, bash on. Bash on regardless. I'd made the decision. I was rather surprised at the time, mind, that you couldn't get into the Royal Navy or the Air Force, and all the various restrictions which was given to me by the recruiting people on the various corps and units or regiments I tried to join. And it was only, as I say, on that mistake when I heard the recruiting officer say to this new lad in the recruiting office at the same time, or he came in while I was in, and he said he'd gone to the Durham Light Infantry. And I thought, when he told me that they were not recruiting for the Durhams, and here was a lad going to the Durhams the same day as I was trying to get into the Durhams, and the reasons were given by the recruiting officer.
Which you've already actually
described.
Can you remember the day of your enlistment? What procedures were followed?
Oh, the day I enlisted was the 23rd of August 1932. I had sent information to the recruiting office at Durham, given my uncle's number, rank, name, and his war service and his decoration, which he'd been decorated during the war by the King of the Belgians. I didn't know what he'd received the decoration for. No member of the family knew what he'd received it for, that I can guarantee. And I sent this information to the recruiting officer, who must have got confirmation from the Office of IC Records of the Durhams. And I was sent a note, if I passed the medical, I was in the Durhams, on a claim through my uncle. Now, strangely, I didn't know it at that time, but I had a cousin serving in the Durhams in India. I didn't know it at the time, but I had a cousin from another part of the county of Durham was serving. I could have claimed in on him, but I didn't know he was in. And I passed the medical.
Was the medical given the same day?
Same day. I was given the medical the same day. I think I was given a simple test, educational test, I think a simple one, or maybe not. But I know simple educational tests were carried out at times. And he just said, sign the attestation form, read it, and read the form and see what it says, which I did. And I signed it, therefore I accepted the full responsibility of being a serving soldier in the British Army.
For what term had you agreed to serve?
7 years in the colours, 5 on the reserve. And there was also a clause, I think, to say if the government required you for an extra year, they could keep you for another year. But I'm not certain about that, but I think it was accepted practice.
Was anything given to you then, once you'd signed that?
Oh, I was given a shilling for the signing on fee, I think. Then I was given a day's ration allowance. Then I was given a warrant to take me from Durham Railway Station to Newcastle Central Station.
Did you have to swear an oath of loyalty?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You swore on the Bible. Oh, yes. You were sworn in.
Can you remember what the oath was?
No, I don't think I would ever remember that. But I just forget now. No, I couldn't even possibly think of one word, because at the time I was so surprised in leaving civilian life and going into the forces. I think maybe it'd be a bit of a shock. Maybe it's not, but... I couldn't remember it. But I know the recruiting officer, he was very fair. He didn't make things sound easy or anything. But
when you say he was very fair, what do you mean?
Well, he explained things to me before I enlisted, before I was fully committed, if you like. He explained various things and what would happen, and that I would have to obey orders, which I'd never had to do before in my life, and discipline, if you bring it that way, yes. And I thought I'd received a fair deal.
So you got your warrant, your travel warrant, and where did you head then?
Oh, up the hill to Durham Station, and then waited for a train to Newcastle, got off at the Central Station. I didn't know where Fenham was. I asked at the railway station of the ticket collector, and I said, how would I get to Fenham? He said, if the gun's across the road, there's a tram with Fenham on. It'll cost her a penny. So I just went across, looked and found a tram and dropped off at the barrack gates.
Did you have any possessions with you at all?
No, nothing. Just the clothes I was in and any money I had, or any little thing that you maybe carry around your pocket. Handkerchief, maybe, or something else. but very little else.
What happened at Farnham Barracks?
Well, when I went in, I didn't know at the time it was a guard room, but you soon get to know. And I went in, and there was a lad there with a badge on, a tape badge on his arm, and it had RP on. I never knew what that meant, but anyhow, I went to him and I showed him the attestation form. He said, "Oh, go in there." And I went in and I saw the corporal of the regiment was there, and he asked me what was I doing, and I said I had enlisted into the Durham Light Infantry on a special enlistment. And either he or a policeman took me along to the recruiting office, to the depot office, where you had to report. And I was received by the depot company sergeant major, who then took me in to see the company commander.
And what was said to you?
They just told me they were pleased, you know, another recruit, really. But I was the first one of a new squad that would be forming, and I would maybe have to wait a while before the squad was formed. As I'd been a special enlistment, they hadn't been really ready for new recruits. So I was put in charge of a corporal. A corporal took me away, and I was allowed to wear my civilian clothes, and for a while I was allowed to walk in and out of barracks in civilian clothes until I got uniform. I was allowed in the canteens, the restroom, or the recreation room, whichever you like to call it, the reading room. I could use the library if I wanted. But you saw things, you know, you used your eyes and your ears, and you met the lads in the canteen of the older soldiers, and, well, the older recruits, if you like, and the depot staff, but the depot staff invariably kept apart, as they were trained soldiers. And if a trained soldier said something to you, you obeyed. You didn't stand to attention to him, but if he said, "Hey, lad, you do this," you did it. Otherwise, he would report you and you would be confined to barracks.
Was there any things that you had to do? I mean, apart from doing what you were told, was there any specific duties you were given at this time?
Not while the squad was forming, no. You went to the quartermaster stores, where you were kitted out. You were given all your kit and you signed for it on your army form. 1157 was the number of the form, I think. That you always had one of those all your life while you were in the services. 1157, it was the history of all the equipment and clothing you'd ever been given. You signed for it from time to time.
How long did you have to wait before you were kitted out? Because you said earlier on that you walked around in civilian clothes.
Oh, not too long. You see, when you went in, all uniforms which wore the brass buttons had the universal badges or on the buttons. Now, when you joined your regiment would automatically make you have those buttons changed to the regimental buttons. So again, you see, you handed your overcoat and your jackets. You had two uniform jackets, service dress jackets, and all the buttons had to be changed. And then for Durham's, you had to have your green patches put on your collar badges. There was a dark green patch, round green patch, and that had to be done.
You had to do that yourself?
Oh, no, the tailor, you paid the tailor for that, but it was taken out of your accounts, you know, whatever. When you went in, accounts were paid monthly. You were never allowed to get into debt. All accounts would be met, then you would get your pay, or you would be debited, and the following week you would get less pay.
What equipment were you given at this time?
Oh, full kit out, two pairs of boots, a pair of PT shoes, three pairs of socks, wool socks, two pairs of long woolen underpants, two pairs of cotton ones, short ones, two service dresses, two complete service dresses, two sets of what they called canvas. I think they would call it denim now, but it was a red, a dark red, and it used to, when you got washed, it used to come nearly to a white, a light pink. But you got two sets of that, and you got a cap, one cup, and you've got a forage cup, a smaller soft cup for normal running around. You're given enough juice for your jackets, and you didn't. I'm not sure whether you wore badges on your applets or your overcoats now. I think you did, just the badges. But you had badges of DLI and bugles. You had four bugles, two DLI, DLI which went onto your shoulder, the applet. And then you were given a cap badge, one cap badge. You'd be given a DP rifle. That was a drill purposes rifle. The there was no firing pin on the bolt. It would be filed off. That was to prevent any accidents, usually. Because with recruits and anybody else, anything could happen. You were given a full set of pouches, haversack, water bottle carrier. Haversack, pack, your braces, your belt, you'd be given a white belt, you give a cap comforter, a hold all, which completed your knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather brush, toothbrush, button stick, button brush. You were never given a button brush, but you were given all the others. All that came in as a part of your equipment. You had to buy your own button brush.
What's a button stick?
Well, you know the old service dressers? You used to have five buttons on the front. Well, you had a button stick, a brass button stick, which would take three buttons, and you would put the polish on, let it dry, then rub it off with a cloth, then polish them. Would stop the polish from going onto the material of your dress. And then also, it was so shaped that it would fit into every D or every fastening, brass fastening on your equipment. And you would just put the little hole over the hole would go over the stud, and you polish the stud without getting any polish onto your equipment, because when you've just blankoed your equipment, you didn't want it to get dirty again, so otherwise you'd be 7 days CB. First time you might get off, second time you would get five, and after that you would get seven for being dirty and untidy on parade.
Was there any other kit that you had?
Oh, a steel helmet and a bayonet.
Where did you store all this then?
Oh, behind your cot. You had a locker, a steel locker, which had a lock. There would be a shelf, and you'd have to fold your kit up and put it in the locker, neat and tidy, as per regular. There would be a picture in the barrack room showing you how you would lay your kit out. And you put your kit in the locker as per that, because if at any time an officer or the sergeant or any NCO, well, any officer at all of any rank came around, and they would say, "Open your locker." If it wasn't during parade hours, if that wasn't as laid down by the photo, which would be in the barrack room, you could be charged again for being untidy. You could never understand it, why they were so strict, but it worked out, and you accepted the Rowlands and you just got stuck in. And if any of your squad mates couldn't get on, you helped them, because the whole squad would be punished, not one but the whole squad. You used to be allowed out on a Saturday until midnight, and on a Sunday until 11 o'clock. This was after tea, or maybe it's after midday meal, providing you're not required for any work, which could happen any time, any day. As you see, you were always told when you were in the army, at least in the Durhams, I don't know about the rest of the army, but you were paid 2 shillings a day. Not 2 shillings an hour, or not 2 shillings a week, but 2 shillings for 24 hours, and you would be expected to do anything required in that 24 hours. So you had no complaint.
Can I ask you how long you stayed at Farnham for?
About 6 months. I'm not quite sure the exact length of time, but about 6 months.
Can you tell me a little bit about the barracks itself?
Well, they were three-storey. The rooms were quite airy, large. As soon as Rivali went, the orderly sergeant came around. He just banged on the door, and you got out of bed quick, or you were on a charge for lying in. And then the next thing you had to do was open the windows to half. They were like slidey up and down windows. And straight away, that was the first thing you did. Right across it. No matter whether it was raining or snowing, you had those windows opened. Summer or winter. Didn't matter which part of the year. Those windows were opened. Then you got washed and shaved. And you got dressed as per the first parade of the day.
What washing and shaving facilities were there?
There was a number of wash basins with hot and cold water running. But you had to be in there first to get the hot water, because very soon the water ran out. So first in got the water, you know. You got more of that. In the winter time, I'm not certain whether this was so or not, but I think at some time in the year, the depot staff used to lay on hot tea or hot cocoa for first thing in the morning, because you would be maybe expected to do a parade in the dark. Then you had your breakfast at 8 o'clock, but by the time breakfast time came, your cot and all your equipment had to be ready for inspection.
So you did that before breakfast?
So you did that maybe the night before. You had everything ready the night before. You might be doing what they call bullshine parades. That was after you finished your day's parades and the sergeant was finished and the corporal was finished. The lance corporal would take over and you'd be set tasks to do, such as getting a shine on your boots, shining your mess tin or your bayonet. Or you might just say, hand your overcoat over, let's have a look at your overcoat buttons. Or then there were various things. And at different days in the week, you had tasks. Each man was detailed. One would maybe clean windows, another clean the fires out, another one clean the toilets, or as it was classed in those days, ablutions. You maybe put two or three men on that, and all that would be done before breakfast. And then maybe the first parade after breakfast, you would march for breakfast, come back, then you would tidy your things up and leave it there for inspection. If that wasn't right, when you were out on parade, the company's arm major and the company, the recruit company commander could go around all the rooms. And if they found a bed not up to standard, that person, no matter how long he'd been in, would be punished. He'd be in front of the company commander, and then he would be so many days CB or extra parade.
In the morning you did drill, is that correct?
Oh, drills or PT. You could go into square and do drill. Could do PT, or if it was weather was inclement, you did your parades in a drill shed. There was a drill shed at the end of the barrack square. Learning the drill was the difficult.
Can you describe how you learned the drill?
Well, it was all done by numbers. You would be taught, and you would stand maybe what seemed ages on one foot as you were moving the other leg. You know, in those days, not like today where you've got the drill movements where there's three ranks. You had four ranks, but you when you formed up in two ranks and you numbered off. The even numbers always did the movement, the odd numbers stood still, and you learnt, you know, to move. But with light infantry you had the extra for non-ceremonial. We carried our rifles at the trail at quick march. We carried them at the shoulder at normal training, or when you went on to parade or off parade. As soon as you dismissed, you automatically went to the shoulder. That is, you brought the rifle up to your right side and your right hand, your middle finger would go into the trigger guard to hold it, and you would move. But when you were on parade, when you quick march, you were always at the trail.
What is at the trail? Where's the rifle position there?
Oh, your right hand is straight down and the rifle's level with down, you carried that. And then you would get the order to change hands, and you would have to change it with.
When you had the rifle at the trail, where would the barrel of the rifle be pointing?
Pointing straight forward. You would keep it at the point of bungs near the trigger guard. You would hold it there. And when you marched, when you did, we learned from going in, from just being able to get together really, and then you gradually began to coordinate movements under the instruction of the three NCOs. There'd always be a sergeant, a corporal and a lance corporal on parade. Very rarely there wasn't. You'd have a company sergeant major wandering around, the company commander wandering around, and the Northumberland Fusiliers would be on one side, the east side of the square, and we were on the west side. And we could hear their NCOs giving them commands, which was completely different to our commands.
Was that ever confusing?
Oh no, once you got used to it, you knew your NCO's call or your officer's calls. You got to know them instinctively. And in any case, their calls would never reach us at the right moment.
When you said their calls were completely different, was that because they were doing different things, or did they have different calls for the same movements?
Well, they would do all their movements from the slope, and they would be marching at the slope, and they were marching much slower. You see, they didn't trail arms, they didn't shoulder their arms. Now, on an ordinary drill parade, not ceremonial, but ordinary drill parade, we could be standing easy. And then our instructors would say, present arms. You would never get any further cautionary word. But as soon as the first word came out, you came straight to properly to attention, properly at ease. From the easy to the at ease. And then when you got the confirmed command, you carried straight out, and you could get from standing easy to the present. Where in the heavy infantry, they would be brought stand at ease, properly at ease, attention. Present, slope arms, and then present arms. We would be the present before they ever got anywhere from the ground. And when we were fully trained, we used to march at approximately 160 paces to the minute, where the heavies only marched at 120, and the guards only marched at 112 when they're on ceremonial. But we used to do route march pace. We were trained to carry a 56 pound pack rifle and the full equipment. We were trained to do that at 130 paces to the minute.
Did that sort of training take place at Benham Barracks?
Oh yes, you started there. You started from a civilian, and you were classed as a trained recruit when you left Fenham. You were taught the rudiments of what you would go to, but they trained you just in drill and weapon training, close combat training. They got you physically fit. You did education. You had education nearly every day. You had an hour's education every day, maybe an hour's PT every day, or roughly that time, you know, around about an hour. By the time you got from one parade to the next and changed, you maybe did an hour's square bashing. That was learning to drill. Then you'd get another hour weapon training. That was the use of the rifle, the bayonet. The only other gun they had was the Lewis gun. Then you would learn to strip the